From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzla, GlobalCalmResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, and Eric Snodgrass will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. He's with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program. Our panelists this week included Arlen Suderman of StoneX, Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing, and Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $3.76¾, down 2.5 cents. December futures at $3.95, two lower, and the March at $4.125, down 2 cents. September soybeans, 4¾ lower at $9.88¾. November at $10.25, down 5¾. In January, $10.19¼, down 5¾ of a cent. Bean meal off $7.80 at $311.70. The bean oil at $42.42, up 25 cents. Wheat futures, soft red, December, up 4¼ cents at $5.65¾. And the hard red, December, at $5.70½, a penny and 3/4 higher. Live cattle futures finished at $181.15, up for 100 pounds at $3.12½ higher. Feeder cattle at $241.60, up $4.17½, and lean hogs at $73.97½. 35 cents higher for the day. Crude oil on the afternoon at $76.93 a barrel. That's up 74 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline just about unchanged at $2.39¼ per gallon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average around 30 points lower at 39,573. Mike Zuzla, GlobalCalmResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us. Mike, like myself, who's been traveling for the last week and a half, and here at the Illinois State Fairgrounds today, you are traveling as well. Thank you for taking the time out of your travels to talk with me on this last trading day, really full trading day, that is, before the United States Department of Agriculture releases the first crop production report for the corn and soybeans at 11 o'clock on Monday morning, and of course, the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Start out by giving me your perception of the week's trade, please.
Well, we had a really different look to the week on Friday than we did prior, Todd. And that, I think, goes back to we had more sanctions that were put on from the United States to China, and that reinforced the demand bear heading into the report for soybeans, which has been the leader to the downside, in my opinion. And so we took out that 1019 low that we put in place during the equity market rout and that risk-off move about a week and a half ago on Thursday. We came storming back, and I would encourage the listener to look at the August beans and the August products, because August meal, after hearing of fresh Chinese sales in soybeans on Friday morning and some fresh meal sales as well to, I believe it was Colombia, if I remember right, might have been an unknown, but the August bean oil rally about $13.50. And so looked like to me we had some trapped shorts who were probably demand bears and beans, and that changed the dynamic quite a bit while the corn just continued to leak and suffer and go through its major low in the September contract of about 378 from that same equity market route area. So we're very vulnerable going into the crop report, but I also feel like we have a lot of negativity already dialed in at this stage.
You were correct that it was a sale to Colombia. Can you tell me about the vulnerability and your worries?
Yeah, in a brief period of time, it really boils down to, are we going to stop mimicking or mirroring the 2014 price action, whether it's feeder cattle or corn? And what I mean by that is we had a high in feeder cattle in 2014, came back in 2015, and that was it. In the corn, we had a move up, obviously, after 2012, went down in 2013, and then 14, we went down even harder and essentially flatlined into a range the next 4 years. The trade has been under the mindset that's what's going to happen again now because of China's demand and their deflation and these U.S. trade sanctions and issues. I would probably argue the idea that the global stocks are a lot tighter now than they were back in 2014. And I would also argue that the dollar looks more vulnerable to a sell-off between now and the election, especially after that equity market break and the bond yield break that we saw about a week and a half ago.
On the global stocks here on the Illinois State Fairgrounds, I did have a farmer ask me, a corn farmer from here in Illinois, ask me, with wheat stocks so tight around the globe, why is it that U.S. stocks are holding things down?
Yeah, and I think this goes back to the sanctions and the strong dollar. I had another producer or four ask me the same thing this week, and I really do think we've been kind of hamstrung and laser-focused on U.S. supplies because of our strong dollar and the fact that China is trying to get supplies from pretty much anybody else but us. But again, Friday, that changed, and we are now the same price as Brazil when it comes to the Paranagua bean price. And believe it or not, Todd, since the first time since 2021, and that's how far back my numbers go, we're actually below the Ukrainian corn price now.
When you look forward to the 11 o'clock release, what do you think it will show on Monday?
Yeah, a big thing to watch is, do we take the world supplies down to equal any kind of increase in U.S. supplies? And who gets the acreage reduction windfall? Is it soybeans? Is it spring wheat? Or is it spread out? Because I think the trade's kind of forgot that. They focused on yield this week instead of ending stocks, if you ask me.
Once we get through this report, will things change very much? Or is the crop just that big in the United States?
Well, the last half of August weather is very important to the soybeans. And so if we go down and break and we resume that 2014 look, most of my recommendations will be in paper positions, because the weather models did turn drier this afternoon, or I should say on the noon update on the GFS. So I think that means something to the bean crop especially. And I think there's a lot of variability in corn, especially in some of the Western Corn Belt states as well. So I'm not trying to talk the supply down in the United States, but I want to be patient to see what USDA says. And then if we resume that 2014 look, we can't gain back those support levels, I'll hedge, because 2014, we went down all the way to the end of September.
Yeah, so you'll hedge at that point and then wait it out, I suppose, for the rest of the crop?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we went down about 35 to 40 cents in the December corn, plus or minus, in 2014 after the August, mid-August time period, and we went down about a dollar plus in the November soybeans. So I do think it's worth managing risk and protecting downside if we resume that type of mindset.
Very shortly, anything for those who are purchasers or inducers? Do they need to consider laying in supplies?
Yeah, I mean, I really think this is an issue where the feeder corn ratio that the funds look at a lot, it's starting to break. I think the corn purchasing for feeders is a really key point right here, right now. Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org, where right now you'll find information about the crop production report from Illinois State statistician Mark Schleusner. He has a five-minute farm doc YouTube video that I placed there explaining how USDA NAS takes counts both in August and then in September, October, and November, those last 3 months when they actually do counts in the field. The first one, August, when they simply make some estimations based on satellite images and other items that they have been collecting. You can find all of that on our website right now at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G. .org. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. We're joined here at the Orr Building, well, at least I am, on the Illinois State Fairgrounds, but Eric Snodgrass is not. He is with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Eric, it's a great day here. I really, first off, want to know what the state fair forecast might look like for Springfield.
Yeah, it looks pretty darn good this weekend. I think it's going to be one where attendance should be huge because the weather's going to be so nice with temperatures, you know, well below the historical averages. I mean, Todd, I don't know about you, but when I think about going to the fair every summer, it's usually how hot and humid it's going to be, how much sunscreen I'm going to have to put on, and if the atmosphere is going to explode into a storm in the afternoon. And this year, the start of the fair looks pretty darn good. I think we're going to get these several first days in with some nice weather around, so should be huge attendance. But, you know, Todd, you bring up an interesting point, and that is, are we going to be looking at any sort of mid-August rainfall that could come through the ice states and just completely cap off what has been a near perfect July for a lot of folks outside of some severe weather? But Illinois just had its second wettest July on record. And when it got dry here at the beginning of August, it also got cool, which means these crops are having, you know, one of their best midsummer time frames when you look back historically. So that's going to be, I think, weighing on the minds of a lot of folks.
Well, it'll weigh on the minds of a lot of folks. I know in the northwestern Corn Belt, I want to talk about this cool weather too. There has been not only cool weather, but even cold weather. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, you know, yesterday it was funny. I was in Owensboro. So before I go to the northwest, I'm going to tell you, Owensboro, Kentucky had an event, and I had two people come up to me and said they wish they would have had jackets on for the field day in Owensboro, Kentucky.
Wow.
Well, this morning in North Dakota, western North Dakota, temperatures got down into low 30s, and the National Weather Service issued a frost advisory. So this cold air that's in place right now is anomalously cold by 20 to 30 degrees in certain spots of the northwestern Corn Belt. But again, what a shift away from any sort of massive stresses that can often happen in early August.
Well, turn your attention to longer range, I think, at this point. What are we talking about for the end of August and the beginning of September?
Well, there's going to be a bit of an interesting battle going on in the weather forecasts, and it's really going to be largely between the European Artificial Intelligence Forecast System and all the other models. Because if you took them at face value right now, it appears in the European model that coming out of South Dakota, hitting Minnesota, into Iowa, straight through the northern two-thirds of Illinois and into Indiana, we're going to have some really good rain. I mean, really good rain coming up. And all the heat's going to get squashed into Texas, which isn't going to be able to let go of it. A lot of 100-degree days coming for the majority of Texas. So if that verifies, that is going to put a cap on beans. That'll help corn finish. We won't need another drop of rain after that. But the reality is some of the other models are keeping that rain farther to the south. I mean, it just rained yesterday in Kansas. We got storms in northern Texas and Oklahoma, and then Missouri is expected to get some rain out of this as well. So the positioning of that rain to get through the middle and into this month is going to be critical. But I'll tell you this, Todd. I had been predicting that the end of August was going to see a pretty significant and sustained warm-up. Right now, I don't think we're going to be able to keep any sort of long-duration heat in place across the state of Illinois as we progress forward. There'll be some hotter days, but not like 10 to 15 days of extremely hot conditions based off of what I know, you know, today as we look out there going forward. And then you got to add in the wild card of the tropical season. We just watched Debbie go through the southeast, delivered a tremendous amount of rain, some places 15 to 20 inches of rain from Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. Now today, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, just wiping out drought across the east. But we want to know, going to have more tropical systems coming up out of the Gulf of Mexico and getting into the central United States, because there's still 80 more days of this tropical season to go. So that's my rundown for the end of August and maybe a little bit into the start of September.
Does adios to El Nino and hello to La Nina make a difference in that process?
Yeah, I knew you knew some Spanish, Todd.
Not much.
So it does. You know, we watched in July La Nina start to build some momentum, but then the beginning of August turned all that around. And by some metrics, we've actually faded back away from any sort of near-term risk of it developing. But I'll just say this. Every long-range model that was just released for the rest of fall getting into winter is suggesting that La Nina is going to play a bigger factor. And you say, well, what does that mean? Typically for the Ohio River Valley, the Mid-Mississippi River Valley, we tend to have a more active storm track. We tend to get better chances of having some cold air come in, and we tend to do better on snow. So overall, La Niñas are typically favorable for the Midwest during winter, but we've got to get this one going. It's not yet really showing signs of kind of life that we want to see. And I'll be honest, Todd, it's also a major factor for South America. If that La Nina gets cranking, South America does have some early onset monsoonal rain risks. In other words, they tend to be a little bit later than normal. And then we tend to be drier in southern Brazil all the way down into Argentina. But my point is this, if it doesn't, if La Nina is not a dominant factor, and we see some more normal Brazilian monsoon action and more normal fronts going through Argentina into southern Brazil, then this could be a big growing season for South America, which, to be honest, is not something a lot of folks want to hear right now.
Indeed not. Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right, sounds good, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason at the Orr Building on the Illinois State Fairgrounds, where 4-H'ers, hundreds of them, have gathered to have their projects for the year judged and awarded. Coming up next, Commodity Week. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of it. If not, you can find it online right now at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org.